All right, well, my clock says 9. Hey, this is a nice loud one. It says 9:30. So let's get started. Welcome to day 2. How are your brains doing? Had a night to sleep and maybe create some more space in there? Well, this session is going to be easy. You're not going to need a whole lot of brain space for what we're going to be talking about today, because it's just a bunch of little tips, right? And this session came about because of, I'll put up my contact information. For the past 6 years or so, I have been a full-time Flair consultant and trainer. And so I've worked with dozens of companies and Flair users all over the world. And I do a lot of screen sharing, right, when I'm doing a training or showing somebody how to do something, or I watch a lot of other people's screens on a web conference as they are showing me some problem they're having or something they want to fix. And a lot of times if I'm doing something, I'm showing my screen and I go just do something that I've done 10 million times, sometimes the person I'm working with will say, "Wait, what did you just do?" I said, "Well, let me show you." And it's like, "I didn't know you could do that. That would have saved me. Why didn't you tell me that earlier? That would have saved me so much time." I said, "I didn't know you didn't know it." So over the years, or on the other hand, I watch somebody do something and I'm like, "Why aren't you using this?" And sometimes this is really basic stuff. And I remember one time I had been working with somebody for literally 2 years, 20 hours a week for 2 years. And she was watching my screen, and I used this little function, one of the ones that we're going to talk about today, to quickly find something in your Content Explorer. And she stopped me and she said, "How did you just do that?" I said, "I have been working with you for 2 years, 20 hours a week, and you didn't know you could do that?" She's like, "You just saved me a ton of time." I said, "I know, and I'm sorry that I didn't show you this earlier, but I didn't know you didn't know it." That's what this is. It's a bunch of stuff like that. Nothing in here justifies a full, right, a full Mad World session, but you put them all together, I think we have a pretty useful session here. And if you can walk away with, I don't know, 2 or 3 things or maybe more that you didn't already know that can help you work a little more quickly, a little bit more efficiently, then I think this will be a huge success. These are things that address small annoyances that people have with Flair. And we get so used to just working in a certain way, and our mind always goes a certain way. Sometimes we don't even stop to look at what's showing up on the user interface and what other options are there. Things that have been in front of you the whole time, but you never realized they were there or never stopped to ask what that little button does, for example. Now, looks like I deleted my Twitter. I don't use Twitter anyway. So, what was I going to say? The title is 10 tips. The truth is, on my sheet, I've got 25. I don't know if we're going to get to all 25, but I think we're going to get more to more than 10. And the ones that I have on the slide deck are these ones right here. If at any point, like I'm going through this, and you're sitting there thinking, "He's just covering over stuff I already know," I am not offended if you get up and leave and go to another session that you think you get more value out of. So if that's you, don't worry about it. But these are the 10 that I put in the slide deck. We are going to cover all these 10, and I think we're going to cover quite a few more too. I don't know if we're going to get to all 25, but we're going to get to more than 10 unless you guys have a lot of questions. And if you have questions, that's totally cool. Open to questions anytime. Raise your hand and we'll walk through your questions. If you want to save it to the end, then I'm happy to meet with you after the session as well. We have a full hour this time. Now, I am going to do all of this in Flair. We're not just going to look at slides. So I'm going to open up Flair and we're going to do it in Flair, so that I can show you how to do some of this stuff. Question up here in front.
On your PDF, or on the stuff we're going to get, like your presentation, are you going to have all 25? Or do we need to take a copy of notes?
So the 10 that are on here, are in the presentation that kind of shows you what to do. The other ones that I'm going to show you, you'll need to take notes on, or if you don't feel like taking notes, I mean, I can share with you my list if you want the list. The only problem is that it doesn't have any instructions because it's just all in my head. And so maybe I need to add a little instruction to it. If somebody wants that, if you want that, then okay, you want it. There's my email address. If you want the notes, and I'll put this up at the end too, send me an email that says, I want the notes for the 10 tips class. And when I compile the notes and get them ready, then I'll send them out to you. What did I just sign up for? Okay, everybody got my email address? Daniel@smartoutput.com. I'm sorry? Can I post them on my LinkedIn page? Sure. I could do that too. Or on my blog. I'll put them out there. Why not? They're not secret. Okay, any other questions? Awesome. Okay, so tell me, can you guys see this okay? How do I make it bigger? Do I adjust the screen resolution? Is that what I do? Let's see, screen resolution. Let's switch it to... That may be a bit extreme, but let's have a look at this and see. Is that better?
Yeah.
You can see this better? Okay. The first thing I'm going to do, we're going to talk just basically about a little bit of tab management. So I just opened up 4 tabs. And if you want to quickly close a bunch of tabs, you can just right-click one of these tabs and say, close all but this. And they all close except that one. So if you get a lot of tabs open, like 40 or 50 sometimes, it can be very useful if you just want to close a bunch of them really quickly to just right-click this tab. And there's other cool things we're going to look at in this tab in just a minute, right? And just close all but that one tab. Now, who was in the lightning talk yesterday? A few of you. So... Those of you who weren't in the lightning talk, have you experienced the situation where you show up in the morning and you open up Flare and it takes 5 minutes opening up all of yesterday's tabs?
Yeah.
You can turn that off. So what you do is you go to File, Options. If I'm going too fast, please stop me. Here, I'll do that again. File. Sounds like there's an earthquake behind me. Options. And then up here in the General tab, uncheck Auto Reload Documents. If you turn that off, then every time you open Flare, you're going to get a fresh state. It's not going to reopen all the tabs that you had opened yesterday when you closed Flare down. I hope that helps some people. It certainly helped me when I figured out that was there 6 months ago after working in Flare for 5 years. Now, another thing that you can do here in this options dialog is you can customize how auto-suggestion works. Auto-suggestion is that little window that pops up when you start typing in like the first 3 characters of a variable or a snippet. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Well, that can be helpful. It can also be annoying. And here in the auto-suggestion tab, you have some settings on defining how you want that to work or not to work. So for example, you could turn the whole thing off if you don't ever want to see auto-suggestion. You can just turn it off. If you want it on, you can determine, well, do I want to include snippets in the auto-suggestion or just variables, which is the default. So you can turn snippets on or off. You can specify how many suggestions you want to show and at how many characters the auto-suggestion actually fires up. If you don't like 3, you could switch it to 5 or to 7 or whatever it is that you want, right? And so this changes how auto-suggestion behaves. If you have more than one variable set in your project, you can select which variable sets you want to use for auto-suggestions and which ones you don't. You know, if you have a variable set that just has company data in it, like your address, your company name, your phone number, whatever, then maybe you don't want that one showing up in your auto suggestion because you're not going to use those. But if you have one that's like product names or field names or whatever, maybe you do want that one showing up. So you can customize how auto suggest works. And it's very, very useful because that little window can get somewhat annoying. Okay, how many of you work in projects and you've got your styles window open here? And my screen is really scrunched. But you look at the styles window. By the way, if you don't know what the styles window is, you can open it from the home ribbon and clicking styles and then this style window button. If you have a big enough screen, you don't have to click the styles drop down like I just did. But I'm working in a paragraph here and I've got a zillion styles over here that I'm not going to use. By the way, what I'm working in is just a straight up Flair template with a few customizations. So p.title is probably something that's used on like the PDF title page or something, and I'm never going to use that style in my topics. Probably the same thing with a bunch of these divs up here, right? There's a whole bunch of divs that apply to just the home page on my HTML output, and I'm never going to use these styles as I'm authoring in my topics. So what if I need to keep the styles, but I don't want them to show up in this little window? Because this window can get awfully cluttered when really there's probably about five or six things that I really need. Well, there's a way to do it. So let's go into the style sheet, for example, and let's turn off p.title in this window. So I'm going to open up the style sheet and come down here to P and select my title class. And I'm going to add a property, and the property that I'm looking for is called MC hidden, right here. MC hidden. And then I can select hidden as the property, and I can save it. Now, this keeps this style in my style sheet, but it removes it from my list. So I no longer see that taking up all sorts of screen real estate over here when I'm never going to use it. And so using MC hidden, you can go turn off stuff over here that you don't need to see. And you can make this available styles list much more efficient by hiding styles that you don't need. Now, there is one caveat with this. It doesn't work for generic selectors. If I go put MC hidden on dot center, it's not going to hide dot center. And so if you have these generic classes up here, then these ones can't be hidden at this point. Another thing I should point out is you can, I don't know if you knew this, but you can pin these styles. So if you're frequently using a particular style, you can just click the pin button right here, and it'll move it up to the top, and it'll keep it at the top for you. So if you're working on a certain project and you're applying styles again and again and again, click the little pin button and move it up to the top of the list, or create a macro for it, which we're going to look at a little bit later. Okay, so that's how you can hide styles from the style window and make the style window a little bit more user-friendly. Question? It applies to the entire project because it actually adds the property in the style sheet. Good question. Everybody hear the question? The question was, when you hide a style, does that apply to the whole project or just to the individual user that hid the style? The answer it applies to the whole project, right? Because it's in the style sheet. Anybody who's using that style sheet's not going to see that style anymore. Good question. Okay. I'm going to open a topic here. Let me see which one I'm supposed to open. What's new? And in this topic, I got a bunch of images in my list. And I like the images. I know they're right. But they sure are annoying when I'm authoring. What I really want to see is just the content. Well, there's a way here to show these images in my editor just as thumbnails. And on your local toolbar, it'll probably be the far right button. On mine, I have to click this little drop down, right? Maybe I can, well, I'll click the little drop down. It's the second button from the right called Show Tags. And if you click the drop down arrow next to Show Tags, you're going to see all kinds of options. And a lot of these are super useful. One of the most useful ones, I think, is this one, Show All Images as Thumbnails. And if you click that, then in my editor, it just shrinks these images down to thumbnail size. Just in my editor. When I generate my output, these aren't thumbnails. Right? They show up as regular size. But in my editor, I can turn the images down to thumbnails, and it makes it much easier for me to just see my content. Right? And follow through the content without having these big blocky images interrupting my, you know, my editing. So I find this a massively useful feature. In fact, I don't ever turn it off hardly. As long as I'm confident that the images are right, usually they're screenshots or something. If they're good and I'm happy with them and I know they're right, I'll turn these off just so I can like look at the flow of the whole topic and see how it's working. So I actually have this on more than I have it off. Show images as thumbnails. Yep. No, it is not going to be a thumbnail for her. So that's similar to the previous question. This one is not a project level setting. This one's a user level setting. Yeah, good question. Yeah, you don't want to freak your colleagues out too much, I guess, do you? Some of this could be colleague freak out material. I'll try to remember which ones of these are going to freak out your colleagues so you can provide sufficient warning.
Or not,
right? If you're going to take the or not approach, make sure you're in source control so that you can back it out when somebody goes and resizes all your images with inline styles. I'm looking through the list. Most of them are not, but some of them definitely are. Yep. Once you enable it, it stays on until you turn it off. Yep. Good question. So her question is, if I close this topic and go to another one, do I have to enable it again? The answer is no, you don't. It'll stay on. Okay. Now I'm going to show you the one that the person that I'd worked with for 2 years, 20 hours a week, didn't know about, which completely dumbfounded me. I didn't realize, and she has a huge project, thousands of topics, and I didn't realize that she was spending all kinds of time shuffling through her Content Explorer trying to find topics. Sometimes, for example, you need to adjust a topic's properties, right? And in order to adjust the topic properties, you have to select the topic in the Content Explorer and go to the properties. You can't do it with a topic like this topic just open. I can't adjust the topic properties, at least maybe in the new version they can. They always release a new version 2 weeks before Mad World. And you have to like wonder, did they just invalidate one of my presentations? Which has happened to me before when they rewrote the search engine 2 weeks before Mad World and I was giving a thing on search. Anyway. I don't see a new option here, but in any topic or snippet, you can right-click it, and you can select Locate in Explorer, and it's going to take you right to where that topic is in Explorer. That's what my colleague didn't know. She didn't know you could use that to find topics in your Content Explorer quickly. Yeah, and there's a couple ways to do this, actually. So from the actual topic tab, you can right-click it, and you can select Locate in Explorer. You can also locate it in the TOC. And I'm going to click that. It's going to show up in two TOCs, I believe. We have an online and a PDF TOC in this project. So I can select which TOC I want to look at this topic in and open it. It's going to show me where it is in the TOC. Now, from the TOC entry, I can also locate in Explorer. Handy keyboard shortcut, Control-Shift-A. So if I'm working deep down in my TOC, I'm like, where on earth is feature 3 in my Content Explorer? Then I can select this and locate it in the Explorer, and it's going to take me right there. From the Content Explorer now, you can also right-click and locate it in a TOC. Right? So there's these locate and explore and locate and TOC are super useful when you know where a topic is in your TOC but don't know where it is in the Content Explorer, or vice versa. Or if you're just working in a topic and you're like, where is this? Is it in a TOC anywhere? Or where is it in my Content Explorer? These two options are extraordinarily useful. They also show up here in the tools. I think it's in tools. There's somewhere up here where you can click them. There they are. Locate in the project ribbon. They have locate in TOC and locate in Explorer. Now, for anything that's in any one of these ribbons, I'm going to do this right now. You can right click it and you can add it to your quick access toolbar. Now, when I do this, what's going to happen is my locate in TOC function is going to show up right here, this button. And I could do the same thing with locate in Explorer. I actually do this with these two. So they show up, excuse me, right here as quick access buttons. I don't have to go into the project ribbon to click them. They're right up here. Although, honestly, most of the time I get them from the right-click context menu is how I usually go back and forth between these. But this can be extremely useful if you want to add things to your quick access toolbar, and they'll just keep adding icons up here. If it gets too big, you could move your quick access toolbar to below the ribbon so it shows up down here. I don't like that personally because it takes up screen space. And I just like putting it up here. But if you find yourself going to a button in the ribbon a lot, you might consider adding it to your quick access toolbar, or even better, creating a keyboard shortcut or a macro for it, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. Now, is there a question, Ray? Yeah, if the topic is in more than one TOC, I'll do it right now, then it's going to show with this box. You want to know what topics are used in which TOCs?
Yeah.
There might be a way to do that. Let's talk about that afterwards. I'm not going to... I have squirrel brain now. Thanks, Ray. I have two ideas on how that might be possible, but I don't know if either of them will work, so we'll need to test them out and see. If the topic's only in one TOC, then it's just going to open that TOC. And if the topic is in no TOCs, and I know you can get that report, show me all my topics that aren't in a TOC. It's surprising sometimes. People are like, I have 100 topics that aren't in a TOC. Yeah, you do. But if it's in one TOC, it's just going to pop the TOC open. You won't see this box at all. Okay. Now, sticking with this same theme of locating things and seeing where things are used, let me see what file I'm supposed to open. I can't remember which one it is. I think here. I'm going to do it this way. Everybody close your eyes for a minute. I think I put it right in here. So I'm going to show you this in just a minute. Okay, so right here in my feature one topic, which is right there in my Content Explorer, I have got a snippet. And of course, I can't edit the snippet here. That would defeat the purpose. But I can't open the snippet from here. So I can right-click the snippet and open it. Open the link right from here. I don't have to go searching for it in the Content Explorer. And it opens the snippet here for me. And if I'm interested in where else this snippet is used, Well, I can find this snippet in the Explorer now. And then on the snippet file, I can right-click it and select View Links. And it's going to show me over here in my link viewer what topics, other topics, use this snippet. It's going to be extremely useful. If you get like feedback from a subject matter expert and they say, we need to go update this paragraph or this step or whatever, and you go into your topic and you look at it, and it's like, oh, that content is a snippet. Well, where else is the snippet used? Does it need to be updated in all these other 8 topics that it's used in or not? Right? This can be extremely useful for maintainability of the quality of your content. The link viewer, you can do that. I find it particularly useful on snippets to see where what topic snippets are used in. You can also use the link viewer just on topics, though. And you could see, you know, what TOCs is this particular topic used in. If it was referenced from other topics, you would see those show up here. So if you haven't used the link viewer before, you got to use the link viewer. I usually just use this little box. This is my favorite box of the link viewer. And my screen's really scrunched. Usually you see more than what I'm seeing here. But I really find this very, very useful with snippets in particular. Now, any questions? Wait. I'm sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me go open the topic again. So here's the topic with the snippet in it. Good so far? I'll close everything. All closed. Okay, and I want to edit this snippet. I can open the snippet. I right-click the snippet and select Open Link. That opens the snippet, right? And so I can now work in it. But it's never a good idea to work in a snippet without knowing where else it's used. So I can right-click the snippet and locate it in the Explorer, and that's going to open my Content Explorer for me. And then from here, I can view the links to where else this snippet is used.
And is that on
the right
where the
link is? This? I did not. Well, I may have already had the link viewer open, but it will open, yeah, if you do that. It doesn't have to already be open in order for you to use it. If you select Link Viewer from this menu, it will open it for you. The Link Viewer is very useful, especially in big projects. This one is a tiny project, so its usefulness is limited, but still useful. How many of you have created macros before? How many of you know what they are? How many of you have avoided creating macros for a specific purpose? Is it because you didn't know how to, or you just... Well, maybe we won't go there. You didn't know you could? How many were in my syntax highlighter session yesterday? So some of you saw me create a macro there. I'm going to create another one here. I think macros are awesome. And basically all a macro is a way, what you do is you record yourself doing something, and by record, all it does is it Flair records what you're clicking. And then once that's recorded, you can rerun that macro, as frequently as you want. And you can even assign that macro to a shortcut key. I find this really useful for things like inserting lists, inserting ordered lists and bulleted lists. My ordered list is assigned to Control 1. My bulleted list is Control 2. I can go through entire complex lists with all sorts of nesting without ever touching the mouse because I can create macros. I also find it extremely useful when you need to use some sort of construct in Flair that the Flair interface doesn't really support. Like in my syntax highlighter session yesterday, we needed to insert pre and code tags. We can put the pre tag in by clicking something, not the code tag. Well, there's another example that people use fairly, well, somewhat consistently. Actually, I'm seeing this more and more, and that is definition lists. How many of you have used definition lists? A few of you. The reason I'm seeing more and more definition lists is because people are using these instead of tables. And the reason why they're using these instead of tables in certain cases is because tables are horribly unresponsive. Right? And so if you have a two-column table, I'm seeing a lot of people use definition lists in replace of the two-column table because they're much more responsive for narrower screens. Now, this is a definition list. There's ordered lists, there's unordered lists, and there's definition lists. We know, you know, from our home menu, we can insert unordered lists and ordered lists, but there is no button here for definition lists. It doesn't exist. It's not the Flare doesn't support them. It does. I have a DL right here, and then a definition term and a definition definition. This is a DL, a DT, and a DD. Those are what those tags are. You can see it here in the text editor if you want. Now, I'm not here to talk about definition lists. I'm sure here to show you how to create a macro to insert this so that I don't have to go into the code and whack it in every time. So what I've done is I've created a definition list snippet. Now, let's say I want to put a definition list in feature one, just as an example. Well, let's go to feature two. Now let's go to feature three. I'm looking for one of out the snippet in here just so I have better, more screen space. So I can drag my snippet in, and there it is, but it's still a snippet. And I can, if I want to, now right-click this snippet and convert it to text. It's no longer a snippet. It's just the snippet content that I can now work with. And it's not linked back to that snippet anymore. Sorry, give me just a second. But that was kind of a lot of steps to do that. I had to drag the snippet over, and I had to right-click it and convert it to text. Right? I'm going to go delete this snippet. And this time, what I'm going to do is I'm going to record myself and create a macro out of that one step, or these two steps, I guess, and then I am going to assign it to a shortcut key. So, to create a macro, and you can do this with any pretty much anything that you can click on this interface, you can do this. Go to your Tools ribbon and click the Record button. And it's going to ask you to give your macro a name. I'm going to call this one insert DL, insert definition list, and then click start. There's somebody who'd be willing to bring me a glass of water from the back. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay, so my screen is now recording. And everything that I do on the interface, this macro tool is going to record. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to come insert a snippet. The snippet I'm going to insert is the definition list snippet. And I'm going to click OK. Thank you. I appreciate that. Snippet's now there. Then I'm going to right-click it and convert it to text. Then go back up to my Tools menu and stop the recording. So now, if I click this playback, I see my Insert DL macro. And if I had more macros here, I deleted all mine this morning, but if I had more here, they'd all show up. Using this Manage option, here's where I can actually assign a keyboard shortcut to it. So I'm going to click this Assign Shortcut button. It's going to say, OK, after you click OK, press the keyboard shortcut you want to assign. So you kind of want to know what keyboard shortcut you want to use. I'm going to go ahead and assign mine Control 3. So this macro will now be activated with Control 3. I'll click OK, and now you can see how it works. I'm going to go delete the one that's already here. Now to insert my definition list, I just press Control 3, and there it is. Question? The macro, when you install a Flare upgrade, do the macros stay? Yes. At least they should. I just upgraded and my macros all stayed, and they still worked. So yeah, they do. Another question? I don't know. I'm sorry. Good question, but I does anybody know? Any other Mac users out there? No. Good luck. There's another question in the back. Can you add a macro as a button? That is a good question. Yes, you can. Never done it before. That looks like it just added the drop down though, right? And so it added the playback drop down here. And I only have one macro right now, but if I were to have more, then there would be more that show up here. Yeah, great question. I had never even thought to do that. Another question? I think I heard two questions. Let's go with the... Were there two questions, or am I going crazy? Okay, let's go to the question, in the blue. That is true. They are user specific. So every user would have to go create them. Mm-hmm. Yep. And there was another question. That was the same question? Oh, wow. That's awesome. So I create macros for a lot of stuff. Well, like I said, anytime I find myself going and clicking things up here on a repeated basis, I'll go create a macro for it, for sure. You guys want me to show you how I use macros in lists, or do you want me to move on? Lists? Okay. So this will only take a second. Delete. So I'm going to go turn on my recording. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. I'm going to go turn on my recording. I'm going to call this one insert OL and start it. And I'm just going to go here to my home and I'm going to insert a numbered list. And then I'm going to go stop it. And I'm going to go create another one. I'm going to assign shortcut keys to these in just a second. This one I'm going to call insert UL. Start that. I'm going to go insert an unordered list and then go stop it. I'm going to manage these. My insert OL, I always assign control 1. My insert UL for me is control 2. So now I have insert ordered list and insert unordered list assigned to shortcut keys, control 1 and control 2. Okay, so now when I'm working in lists, I can press Control 1 to get an ordered list, for example, and I can start typing in my steps. And then I can keep going. Step 2, let's say I need some nested content under here. I can press Control Semicolon to turn it into a paragraph item, press Enter, and press Control 1 again to get my sub-steps. Step A, Step B. And then I can press Shift Tab to get back to step 3. And let's say under this one I need a bulleted list. I can press my Control 2 and get my bullets. Bullet 1, bullet 2, for example. And let's say I'm done with the list. I can go all the way back out. So I just put that whole list in without touching my mouse. Just because I was able to assign insert OL and insert UL to shortcut keys. It also helps to know about this paragraph item. Did Nita talk about this yesterday in the List of Palooza session?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. If you're not using those, I recommend that you do, for sure. Yep, so I'm going to go put in step 4. So let's say I need some content after step 4. It doesn't matter what it is, an image, a paragraph, a table, if you're using them, a nested list. Anytime I want to put anything after step 4, I want to convert this list item into a paragraph item. Now, you can do that by right-clicking the list item and select Make Paragraph Item, or you can memorize this shortcut key, which is what I recommend doing. So I'm going to press Control Semicolon, and if you watch this list item block, you'll see what happens. It just adds a paragraph tag. Now, when I press Enter, instead of getting a whole new list item, I just get a second paragraph within the same list item. And from here, I can do whatever I need to do. I can type more content, like I said, put a note in, add a table. And in my case, in this demonstration, I can add another list. So I can press Control 1 because I have my macro and start putting my list in. We can go even further if we need to. I don't know if my style sheet is set up for this, but if I need to go even deeper than that, I can. And just keep going. And then to get out of it, you can just press Shift-Tab, right, until you get to where you want to be. It just keeps moving you up. Does that help? Did that answer the question about how to do that? Okay. Okay. So we created macros. Was there a question that I hear? I think I am starting to hear things. Okay. Let's talk about a couple different viewers. A couple different ways to view things. So in your TOC, this is probably how you're used to looking at a TOC, something like this. This is a nice view. You get to see how things are nested. Not bad at all. It actually shows very little information, though. Now, there's another way to view your TOC, and all you have to do is click this View Tree button, and it shows your TOC as a grid. Now, this, in some cases, I mean, it doesn't show the hierarchy nearly as well, but it shows a ton of information about your TOC entries. Now, this project doesn't have hardly any information in here, as you can see, because it's just a default project. But if I were to have assigned master pages or page layouts or section breaks or page breaks or chapter breaks or conditions, or if I had any HTML classes, all of that shows up here in this grid view. So it's a really handy way to get a lot of information about your TOC entries. And what can be especially useful if you need to do some deep level analysis on these, because of course these can be huge. You can have hundreds of topics in your TOC. You can actually export this to a CSV file, and then you can work with it in Excel to do some analysis on it. You know, and I think you can even do a little bit of analysis in here because you can, I think, sort on these. Yeah, you can sort on the columns. You can also turn columns on or off. You can select which ones you, everything, by default, everything is on. But if you just right-click up here in this column view or in the column heading, you can turn different things on or off that you may or may not, maybe you don't need to see half this stuff. We'll go turn it off, you know. But being able to export this to Excel can be really, really, really useful. Because then you need pivot tables and all kinds of things if you really need to do some analysis on what's going on in your TOC using Excel. There's a very similar view available just for all of the files in your project, and that is in this view ribbon in the file list. This file list just brings up a list of the files that you have in your project. Now, you see up here just HTM files. It's because I have this filter on. But I turn the filter off, then I'll see everything. I'll see images. I see some Git stuff that I have. This actually is, again, a Git repo. And I can go through and I can look at a lot of data on my files. You can see. This can be extremely useful information to know. In fact, this is information I would definitely want to know, like dimensions on these pictures, if they're, oh, those are just images, this type of thing. Very, very useful. And as I showed you, you can filter this list based on file type, if you just want to look at a particular type of file. And like with the TOC grid view, you can also export this to Excel as well. You can see how this could be really useful if you have hundreds, even thousands of topics to get a different view of the topics. This is especially useful for me. These two columns are ones I always look at. If there's a title in my topic, I want to know for sure. Because this is the highest rated thing in Flare's search algorithm. And if my title, if I have a hard-coded title in there, then I want to know what the title says. If you don't have a hard-coded title, then Flare by default uses the first heading in the topic as the title. So I actually recommend not putting titles in unless you have some specific things you need to do to work your Google search engine optimization or something. I'm also super interested in the description because the description is metadata that's also shows up very highly in the search, the Flare search engine. If you're using the Flare search engine, it gets a lot of weight. And descriptions can be very useful to have, but they're also a bit of a pain to maintain. And similarly to the title, if you don't specify a description, which let me just show you if you don't know where you'd specify that, right-click a topic. In fact, this is a funny story. I'll tell you it real quick. Into properties, I was talking about that search thing, that presentation I did. Here's where you could specify the description. I showed this in a presentation once. And after the presentation, this guy comes up to me and his face is white. He says, "Are you telling me that what I put in the search description, in the description field here, people can actually see it and it shows up in the search engine?" I was like, "Yeah, it shows up on the search results page." And he's like, "Oh, crap." And he took off. He's like, "I've been using that for my notes." What you put in the description field here factors in heavily in the Flare search engine, and it shows up on the search results page. So be careful with what you put in the description. If you leave it blank, by default, Flare uses the first 300 characters of your topic as the description. So I always recommend leaving the title blank, except for very unique circumstances. Descriptions can be really useful if you can pack it with keywords, right? But remember, it does show up on the search results page. People see this description, but they're a bit of a headache to maintain. So if you go open up your file list, you can start looking, hey, do I have hard-coded titles? And do I have descriptions? And am I using those properly? And this is a way to get that view without having to go into the properties of every single topic. Question? Yes. If you leave this blank, then say for feature one, this text will be set as the title.
So I can leave the title in the topic, but remove it from that field.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So watch this. Let's see. I'm going to go set a title on this topic. This is my title. And I'm going to go build an HTML target. I think. While that's working, I'm going to look at a few other things here. Yeah, there's a few things I really want to get to. So I open up my output. And I search for feature one. Let's see what we get. Nothing. Except for, this is my title. And if I click this is my title, it takes me to feature one. So if you don't maintain your titles and you're changing your headings in your topics, what somebody sees on the search result page gets out of sync with the actual heading of the topic that they see when they click. This is what shows up on your search results page is the topic title. And if you don't specify a title, like in feature three, we don't have a title, then it will use the first heading of the topic as the topic title. That's why I recommend not fiddling with topic titles.
Okay, so conversely, if I want my title always, I'm not going to change the title of the topic, I always want it to show up in the search, I should pop it, right?
If you want it to be different than what the first heading is in the topic, then yes. If you just want everything, all your titles to be the same as the first heading in your topic, then don't touch the title field.
Leave it blank.
Yep, for sure. What were we talking about? File list. So that's all I have to say about the file list. Sure. Question over here. Awesome. Did you guys hear that? This use case for file list? He'll open the file list and he'll sort the list by date. And he can see what topics his colleagues have been working on. That's awesome. Haven't heard that one before. That's great. Thank you. Any other use cases for file list out there? I mean, there's a ton of data in here. There's all kinds of things I'm sure you can do. Okay. How about this one? How many of you work in heavily conditioned topics? Your topics look like rainbows. There's a super handy feature. Let me see. I put it up here in Getting Started. I put some conditions in here. So this topic has a few conditions in it, two conditions. You can see the condition content. And if you're looking at this and saying, wait a minute, that's not how my conditions look, it's probably because you don't have this little button clicked. And maybe this is what you see. And all you see are your conditional indicators over here in your code blocks. Well, if you want to see more than that, then click this little button. And it'll actually highlight the whole block. Or if you're setting conditions on spans or like within sentences, which I don't recommend. But if you are, then it'll show up that way. So this is a condition topic. And in my topic viewer here, I can actually turn conditions on and off. So with this super handy button, select the conditional expression for viewing this topic in the XML editor. I can click that, and I see my condition tag sets. And I can go set includes and excludes and so forth. But what's way more useful is to select which target. So if I want to see what's going to show when I build this, when I build the product A target, I can select product A right here and click OK. And now I'm just going to see in my editor the top, the content that's going to build when I build the product A target. Can do the same thing, of course, for product B. Now this is a very simple scenario with just two snippets, or excuse me, conditions, so it may not be super useful, but if you're using a lot of conditions, and some people do, and I've worked in projects that have a truckload of conditions, this is very, very useful. When you're working it, you wonder if you got your conditions set up right. By the way, I'm doing a whole presentation on best practices with conditions in Dublin. So if you need help with conditions, you can justify that to your boss. I have to go to Dublin. Okay. And it's going to be awesome because I've seen some nasty conditions before. And if you get into a conditions knot, there's no really good way out of it. It's a bad position to be in. But anyway, so this is an opportunity, a way for you to be able to preview what content is going to be included or excluded in a given target without having to build the target and look at it. You could also do this using preview, I think, but I just do it this way. We have 5 minutes left. Oh boy, which one do I do? There's so much good stuff in here. How many of you are building PDF output? How many of you get frustrated that you can't figure out what's going on with the styles in your PDF output? Because right with HTML, you can go look at the code, you can use developer tools, you can see what's going on. Well, let me show you this really quick. I am going to open up my output folder. I do have a PDF target here. I did build it last night. I'm going to right-click it, and I'm going to open up the output folder. Right, this is going to take me to where my PDF output is. Now, if I go up one level, I have this temporary folder here. When Flare builds a PDF document, it first converts that into HTML files, and then it turns it into a PDF. Those PDF files get put here in the temporary folder. Here they are. This is the interim state between my PDF target and my PDF output. And if I have something going on in one of these topics, by the way, these have funny names, but the prefix here, like feature 1, feature 2, feature 3, these all align with my actual topic names in my Content Explorer. I can open it in a web browser, and I can use my developer tools to inspect what's going on. It's like, holy smokes, look, this is actually building as an H2, even though it's an H1 in the topic. And that's probably what you want in this case, but heading levels in PDF, if you're using the TOC to set the heading levels, can actually get kind of confusing. And sometimes it's really useful to be able to open up this interim file and look, for example, at what heading level is actually being applied in my output. This can also be useful to just see what styles are working in your PDF document. So this gives you a way to view what's going on in your PDF document in that transform from your Flare source files to your PDF output, to see some additional data on what might be causing your PDF output to go crazy, is to look at these interim build files. Again, it's in your output folder, in this temporary folder here. You go into temporary, and then you go into your PDF or whatever, you know, your PDF folder, and you'll find all those files. Super useful troubleshooting technique. All right. Does anybody have any burning questions? Okay, there's a burning question right here.
Can I check which images that are in my folder are actually used in the project and not the ones that aren't?
The question was, can I check what images are actually used in the image folder? Or which images are used in the project? In other words, do I have dead weight in there? Yes, you can. From this analysis tab, right, you can go to, unused items. And this is going to run an unused items report. And then you, from here, you can select unused images. This is really useful. That's a really good question. This is how you can check to see what stuff is not used. Now, this doesn't give you as good of a report as what Ray was asking about. This is one place where my squirrel brain went. But you could at least look what topics aren't linked or what topics. Actually, that report is somewhere in here. The topic's not in a TOC. There's a whole session, I think, that Nita's giving on using this tab. There's a lot of good stuff in here. So, yeah, that's how you can look to see if you have images that you're not using or a lot of other stuff. Well, if you have unused images, it's going to show up. Oh, I do. Look, I have three right here. So I think, yeah, I could click those, like these two I'm not using, and I can go delete them. And they're gone now. Okay. Let me show you one more thing. And there's a few super cool things on this list I'm not going to get to, and so I'll have to send my report out afterwards that I promised to do. The other cool thing, and I just started using this one a few months ago, really, was this quick launch bar up here. This quick launch bar is really useful to find things if your project is big. Let's say, for example, I'm looking at my output that's generated, and somebody said this topic is messed up, and I don't know where it is. Don't want to go find it. I can look, of course, up here, and this is going to show me the path to where it is in my Content Explorer. I could also just, like, copy the file name and go up here and put it in my quick launch bar, and it's going to find it for me. And I click that, and it takes me right to it, right? And then, of course, I can use my Located Explorer, and all kinds of things open up. You can also use this quick launch bar to find options. Like, I can't remember where locate in TOC is, for example. Like, all these commands. Let me see if I could find. Like, right here, you know, you can, all the commands that are in these ribbons, and sometimes you don't remember where it is, you can use this quick launch toolbar, this quick launch bar to find it. Really, really useful to find stuff in your project, the quick launch bar. So pay attention to that up there. It's there by default. All right. It is 10:30. That was a quick hour, I feel like. Maybe it wasn't for you, but it was for me. Thank you for attending. Again, if you want to get in touch with me, here's my information. Where's my information? There's my information. If you want the notes, send me an email. And I'll make sure you get them. I'll probably post them or something and then send you a link to it. But there are a handful of things on my list that we didn't get to. But we did get to more than 10. And I hope that something in this session was useful for you. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.